Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 31st of March. Very nice to have you with us. The last day of March, it is 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. We thank you for being with us, and we know that it's all turbulent. It's all weird. Everything seems strange and a little bit otherworldly and out of body. And this time that we spend together is very nice for us, and hopefully you will agree. We get to kind of hash things out and understand what's going on a little bit better. We welcome you to join in on the conversation, as always, panel@wamc.org. And all we ask is that you keep your letters short and to the point, and that, be civil and all that good stuff. Be the good people that you are, and we'll be good. We love your letters, panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce everybody, and then we'll get started. There's always a ton to talk about these days, so we'll kind of throw out a bunch of things as we've been doing, and we'll see what we land on and what you want to talk about and what the panel wants to talk about, and we'll go from there. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning, Chief. Just fine.
Excellent. Good to have you, as always. Thank you very much. We also go to our good friend Mike Spain, who is here, former Times Union Associate Editor and just our pal. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it, and thank you very much for being with us. Rosemary Armeo joins us as well, investigative reporter and UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary Armeo. How are you?
I'm okay, except as expected, my cruise for the end of May has definitely been canceled. I know this is not a big surprise and not a big problem compared to what others have, but it does show how our world is shrinking, and I'm going to blow up something if I can't get out of this house.
Okay. Well,
well, I'm glad because you're too precious to us to lose to a stupid crew.
But I will say when you first the point I get out of that story, Rosemary, is that when we first started talking, you said you were going on a cruise. We were like, oh, well, that's in May.
Yes, exactly.
And
that's
now,
exactly right.
And now May doesn't seem that far away. And a lot of states, including Virginia yesterday, putting in some restrictions up until the middle of June. So
yeah, it's true. And, you know, the other thing is that you have to feel, I don't feel for most cruise lines, don't get me wrong, but this is Viking, and they are desperate to keep their business once this is over. So they're offering a huge, don't take a refund, please take a voucher. We'll add 25% to the value, and it'll be good for 2 years, which any other time would be a fabulous deal, except that how do we know it'll even be around? How can
right.
they rebound? And then
yeah.
you're out everything. So everything feels like a gamble, and I feel sorry for them, worse for us, and worst of all for people who are dealing with way more than messed up travel plans.
Well, that's right. And also, but that extrapolates to so many different things of whether it simply
yeah.
be, you know, things that you were going to do with your family or the baseball league or all kinds of things that people just don't know and that money's being held and nobody really knows what to do. And well, let's start off. Good morning, everybody. And thank you, panelists. It's wonderful to have you here. So
what about JP?
Oh, my God, JP. I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I was so
don't
bereft.
Apologize.
I was so bereft by Rosemary's trip cancellation that I I withered on the vine and I forgot your sterling voice. JP Miller joins us. He is the man behind the Empire Report. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
Excellent. I swear I will never forget you again. All right. Here are some headlines. More Americans are told to stay home. Roughly 3 of 4 people in the U.S. are soon or will be under instructions to stay indoors as states and localities try to curb the spread of the coronavirus before hospitals are overwhelmed. As I mentioned just a moment ago, Maryland, Virginia, Washington issued stay-at-home directives on Monday, virtually shutting down the U.S. Capital region. Meanwhile, the president expressed optimism about the federal government's ability to provide adequate testing, but state governors painted a different picture. Governor Cuomo of New York said the worst of the outbreak has yet to come as a Navy hospital ship arrived in Manhattan to provide relief to the city's hospitals, With a $2 trillion relief package signed into law just last week, Washington is already considering more legislation to fight the outbreak and bolster the economy. Meanwhile, another fairly good day on the stock market yesterday. So what does that mean? The Trump administration has sped up construction of a wall on the southern border, arguing that it will help limit the spread of the virus from Mexico. Public health experts say that such a barrier would not mitigate the outbreaks already occurring in every state. As the pandemic brings life to a halt, leaders around the world are invoking executive powers and extending authority with scant resistance. Rights groups agree that extraordinary measures are called for, but critics say some governments are using the crisis to seize powers that have little to do with the outbreak. See the above item of the wall. And the other interesting story, it's the most horrible story of this is that we have over 161,000 cases, and the death toll in this country has gone over the 3,000 mark, 3,017 cases, and officials within the administration, both Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci, saying that this wave could bring between 100,000 and 200,000 deaths in this country alone. So those are the headlines, and we go to the panel for some response and thought, and you can take whatever you wish of those. Alan Chartok.
Well, Fauci, of course, is our hope here. He speaks facts while the president speaks nonsense and keeps contradicting himself. Joe, this is horrible. There's no other way to paint this other than that it is horrible. And this is when we need leadership in this country. I believe we're getting it on some levels. We are not getting it on others. And we're certainly not getting it from the president of the United States, who, as long as I'm around, I'm going to remind people, once said this was nothing and it was a Democratic hoax. Now, as far as the wall is concerned, it's fascinating to me that he just never gives up. And now the latest justification for the wall is the virus. And he will keep on doing that. That's what the base wants, and that's what he's going to give them.
Rosemary.
Yeah, Alan, you're right. How can those doctors stand behind him with a straight face while he's talking about a wall keeping out a virus? It's just hideous. And his approval rating, I'm sorry, even if it's for patriotism, come on, America, wake up. I think that there is some good hope. It appears that the shutdown, such as it is, because it isn't nationwide, as you know, that's another symptom of his failing leadership, has slowed at least the pace of the disease, and that's good. But he was up there crowing about, we can keep it down to 100,000 to 200,000 deaths, and that would be great. That is not great. That's worse than what happened at 9/11. It's worse than the toll of the Vietnam War. There's no way this is a good thing. It should not be painted as his accomplishment. And
I'm ranting. No, you're not ranting. I don't want to stop you in mid-rant. I just want to add one more thing. The thing that all sort of galls me, as my mother would say, is on that. Those numbers are one thing, but the other side to that is that the projections, the starkest projections, noting that more than 2 million Americans could have died.
Right.
So
right.
Instead, what he's done is say, I have saved 1.8 million lives.
It's ridiculous. And here's one more thing about his perfidy, and then I'll let someone else speak. His minions, and by that I mean the governors of Missouri and Florida, who are in places where the disease could explode, still have not taken the most active measures that they could. It's just completely irresponsible. It's not just lack of leadership. It's bad, horrible, deathly leadership.
Florida is the one that just scares me because that looks like it could just be awful.
Yeah, they have a very elderly population, but you can say the same thing about Mississippi and Missouri, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Those governors are just simply following the CDC orders, which are the Trump recommendations, and they're going to kill people.
Because
they are killing them already.
Because he's always on my mind. J.P. Miller, what do you make?
I agree with Rosemary. I look at the governors of these states and wonder why they don't look at what has happened to New York City and what happened to New York State in a few quick weeks, where we went from barely any cases and now we are the epicenter of the planet. And states are just a few weeks behind us, and they should certainly be getting leadership from the president on this in terms of getting them more shut down and having more restrictive measures. And these governors that are only following the CDC guidelines, I agree, Rosemary, they are going to look more negligent than other leaders that, you know, that were first on this.
Yeah. Yep.
Mike Spain.
It's shameful.
Yeah. You know, I do want to say that I am grateful that the president of the United States is listening to the people around him. And I'm grateful that Deborah Birx and Anthony Fauci are able to get his ear and to be convincing, as they evidently were, because he has pivoted. And he's now going on Fox News telling people how, so the rest of the people that don't watch Fox News might have gotten the message already. Now the people who watch Fox News will hear it right from the president how serious this is. And that's really important to bring people along and not, you know, it's very easy to point out all the things wrong that the president did and all the things wrong that he's doing, but it's also important to urge people to take the actions that the governors have ordered, many of the governors have ordered, and the fact that he's been persuaded is, you know, like him or not, it's really important that he has been persuaded. And right now he's saying what is the right thing, he's doing what's right, and to some extent. And that's important. This is a step forward.
The New York Times writes, that President Trump's decision to abandon his goal of reopening the U.S. by Easter was driven, his aide said, by the number of possible deaths and polling that showed voters overwhelmingly preferred to keep containment measures in place. After asserting that shutting down the economy would be more damaging than the virus itself, Mr. Trump said on Monday that restrictions may be even toughened up a little bit. He also stressed that the starkest predictions given to him by public health officials, noting that more than 2 million Americans could have died in the absence of any measures to contain the virus, which I was alluding to earlier. Anyone on what Mike just said?
No, he's right.
All right.
I'll say this. I don't really care if it was the two doctors convincing him how serious it is, or Trump seeing the poll numbers, if it made him understand this to be a really big threat, it worked.
Mm-hmm. It did. Well, go ahead.
I agree with that. However, and we should be grateful that there is some sanity coming into this. But think of the lives that have gone the other way because this unspeakable man has postponed doing what he needed to do in the beginning, claiming that it was not a problem and claiming that he was going to, that it was a Democratic plot. This is beyond belief. And Mike, while I agree with you, it's good we're getting something now in terms of leadership. It really is despicable.
You know what's to add to Alan, it isn't just in the past. That's bad enough. But it's going on right now. There are some creative solutions to this whole situation. They are not being suggested or led by the federal government. You're seeing it from the New York Times. You're seeing it from our own governor, Andrew Cuomo. We are not getting experts from China, who are now the world's leading expert. Look, they have fewer deaths than we do. They contained it in Wuhan. We don't have those guys coming over here. In fact, the president spurned help from China when it was offered in a phone call with the Chinese president this past weekend. Why aren't we doing, on a nationwide basis, what Cuomo is doing here, which is inviting in retired or underused healthcare workers from other states while the crunch is here? Why isn't the federal government leading a procurement effort, perhaps through the military, through the Pentagon, to move ventilators from one state to another as hospitals require them? This would all be proactive. He actually would be a war president. He actually would be doing some good. But he doesn't listen to anybody except like those doctors who are there in his office every day with maps and charts, fighting back the political advisors. That's the real dilemma here. It's not just the past, it's ongoing.
I want to go to JP, but it just when you were talking a moment ago, I mean, the thing about Governor Cuomo in New York calling for those doctors, I mean, that is working, too. He has made the call, and they're coming in record numbers, and that is a testament to them and to, I mean, you could almost hear the pleading in the governor's voice of saying, please come, and we'll return the favor.
That's true, Joe, but the other thing that is amazing about this, they're coming, but some of them will die, and they know that some of them will die.
Yes.
The number of health care workers who have been caught by this virus is amazing, and yet they come and they do their jobs. I've got increased respect for the medical training and the ethics of so many of these physicians.
You know, I will say there was an excellent report, and I'll try to find out a little more information. I don't know if anybody saw it last night. There was an amazing report. A reporter went into one of the hospitals on CNN last night.
Yes.
Did you see that, Rosemary?
It was. Yes, I did.
Yeah, it was really incredible, and it was great reporting. What came out of it, though, at the end was that the reporter was better equipped, had better equipment, had a hazmat suit on, while the nurse was just in a mask and scrubs, and was saying, you know, how did you get, you know, where do you get your stuff? You know, how do we get that? Go ahead.
You know, here's the thing. In any emergency, people want to act. Anybody who's been a newspaper reporter who writes about a fire and then suddenly you're inundated with people sending in contributions of food and money knows this. Leadership would say, here's what we need. Please help us. And people do respond. That's why Trump, not only it's just bad because he's so selfish and foolish and childish, but he's not leading people who really want to do the brave things that you're talking about.
JP, we have a minute. I give it to you.
Well, I think luckily a lot of the national response that you're seeing is driven by our Governor Cuomo. You know, Governor Cuomo called for the U.S. Navy ship Comfort to come in, and it came. He called for 4 new temporary hospitals to be built in New York City. Trump approved them the next day. He then called for an additional 4 temporary hospitals to be built in New York City. Trump approved those the next day. So I think you're seeing Governor Cuomo, thankfully, driving a lot of Trump's actions here and calling him to action. And hopefully other governors will do the same as Governor Cuomo has so effectively here in New York.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We do welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We have quite a few already. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and JP Miller make up our panel. And we welcome you to join us. We'll continue our conversation after this break. 33 minutes past 9 o'clock. It is a Tuesday morning, the 31st day of March. It's hard to believe we've only gone through one quarter of the year, isn't it? But but here we are. It seems much, much longer. Welcome back, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller. All right, we go to letters, and then we'll move on to some other topics as well. And again, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Please, please, please keep them short. Paula says, what was the point of the corporate shout-outs to people like the executive of MyPillow when we're dealing with a medical crisis? This is the same executive who laid off 150 workers, and his message to the American people is to read the Bible? Paul makes a great point. You know, that is one of the things that is often brought up when news outlets such as ours have a debate as to whether you run these press conferences or not. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that there's been a lot of debate about whether we run and the news media runs the press conferences verbatim or whether they cut them up and put them in context. And I think that the consensus has been evolving, and that the latter seems to be what's going on right now. It's where you pretty much you can stream it. If someone wants to see the whole thing, they can go somewhere and see it streamed. It's pretty easy to do that now. But if you're a news organization, you really want to digest the whole thing and take out the important parts and maybe sift through what the news is and just present that, because there's so much other important news going on all over the place that to fill the airwaves with with this, you know, sort of unfiltered politician talking, it really is not responsible journalism. It's good public service, and there's a place where you can get it. But journalists, I think, are required to put things in context and tell the whole story and not just part of it. And this guy getting up there and you know, grandstanding and saying that Trump is the greatest president in American history and that people should you know, read the Bible during their time off now that they're home sheltering. I mean, you know, that would be filtered right out. I mean, that's a nice thing to say, and certainly some people may agree or disagree, but it's not news.
No. Rosemary?
Well,
oh, go ahead, Alan.
Well, I just wanted to say that I spoke to a guy yesterday. I've been trying to talk to people about this. And I said, and how about Andrew Cuomo? Do you want him on in the morning on CNN? He said, oh, yeah. You can't do that. You know, you have to let people decide for themselves. Now, CNN has come up with a unique way of dealing with this. What they're doing is they're letting the guy talk, and then they're fact-checking him as he goes.
Right.
And right underneath on the scroll, they're saying, that's not true, that's not true. Now, WMC can't do that. And in fact, to some degree, we saw NPR try to deal with it by interrupting him and stopping what he was saying and then giving their analysis, except that unlike CNN, their analysis stunk, to put it better.
Well,
it
goes over other questions that people are asking the president, and it was taking out the content. It wasn't coming afterwards. Rosemary, did you see the press conference or the availability last night? What did
with
you
the
think?
Sycophants, yeah.
What did you think?
Hold
on. But what did you think of Jim Acosta's question?
I think all fat questions are fair. I teach my students that. There's no such thing as a stupid question.
So Jim Acosta asked if the president felt like he had let the American people down.
Yeah.
And the president went after Jim Acosta. They obviously don't like each other. We know that. I just didn't know, you know. And then the reporter
Jim Acosta was being a cutie pie.
Yes.
And considering that respectful, completely normal questions like the black woman, I'm sorry, forgetting her name.
She's from PBS NewsHour.
Exactly.
Who asked the question after about testing?
Yeah, he also doesn't like her. Alcindor.
Thank you. Yes.
I'm sorry. I forgot, blanked on her name. I'm old.
But, Mike, do you remember?
Yeah, Mike had it.
Okay. What? Well, can we hear it again?
Alcindor.
Yeah.
Yeah, her last name is Alcindor.
Her question was completely
PBS.
Reasonable, and he treated her with disdain. And I applaud the journalist who then did get Trump's attention and said, no, I want Alcindor to ask her a question. That's what the media needs to do. So good for Acosta for asking a question that's in your face. Good for other reporters who are standing up for one another. But I do not think there's any way that you can not cover these conferences. The fact that we have an idiot president who needs to be flattered is the news.
I agree, but if you know, as an interviewer, if you know what the question is, if you know how the question is going to be answered, are you not giving, you know, are you not putting the golf ball right on the tee and allowing him to hit it to whatever base he's looking to hit it to?
But as an interviewer, you also have a mix of softball questions, which you're talking about, and in-your-face questions. And the journalists need to do, they're starting to, they need to do a better job mixing them up. He should get both.
I agree.
I want to point one other thing. Go ahead, Mike.
JP. Yeah.
JP.
I thought it was a totally fair question by Acosta. You saw de Blasio get asked by Jake Tapper this weekend a very similar question about delays in response. And what I love about the unfiltered press conferences is the viewer gets to watch the press conference and watch it for themselves, watch the questions, how the elected official answers the questions. And so I love the unfiltered format. I feel like by watching the Cuomo press conference every day and watching the Trump press conference every day, I am more informed than watching, you know, what you get on cable news.
Yeah.
You're actually getting the news yourself and interpreting yourself.
Well, but you don't live in Alabama. What I mean by that is that the latest polls show that half the country is with him. Now, if half the country's with them and vehemently another half are really against them, you got to think that if you don't let them on, you're going to have that half that are with them saying, look, this is the phony Maloney media group, and we got to put a stop to that. So I think the media has to defend itself. I'm with Rosemary on this one. And JP, but you gotta have them on. You cannot let it appear that you're playing sides.
The other thing too is that one of the things that it has crept into these press conferences. I mean, it's been the case since the beginning of this administration, but you're seeing more and more what I will call fringe news outlets of very right wing outlets that have the credentials that are coming in that are asking questions. There was one 2 days ago where he was thanking her for the question, and that's not a nasty question. That's a great question. Thank you for that question. And that, you know, that's a lot of a manipulation as well. Mike or JP, who did I cut off?
Oh no, I was just going to add, I mean, I completely agree. It is the obligation, responsibility of the journalist to ask hard questions. And that's been an issue of contention with Trump. If he gets asked a hard question, he often attacks the questioner rather than answering the question. But there is a little bit of risk, and I worry that, you know, people who watch these press conferences may look like, you know, the journalists are grandstanding and trying to ask that gotcha question simply to embarrass Trump. And it's and you have to be careful that it is strictly not to catch him in a misstatement, because, you know, there's lots of misstatements that everybody makes, and he makes more than anybody, and they've been documented. I don't think it's anything big to get him to say something stupid, because he'll do it on his own without being prompted. But when a journalist is asking a question that's extremely pejorative, and, you know, like, you know, when have you, you know, have you stopped beating your wife kind of question, or if it comes across that way, it just becomes a distraction from what we really have going on here, and that's we have a major national crisis. And maybe there'll be plenty of time before November to bring out the tape on Trump's idiotic statements and the timetable when he said each thing. And really, right now, as an American citizen, don't you really want to know more about how to be safe, what's being done to protect you and your loved ones and the country and everything, that your job and your livelihood?
Well, Mike, just to be fair, wait, Rosemary, let me.
It's not like you have to choose.
Hold on.
Let me just ask this one question of Mike, because it's such an important point. So to be clear, would you have asked, do you think it was wrong to ask that question, have you let the American people down?
I think that's a borderline thing. You know, I mean, Jay Tapper has, Jim Acosta, I mean, has such a adversarial relationship with Trump already. It's like he could ask him anything and he'd probably blow up at Acosta. He tried to have him kicked out of the press room, and finally, you know, that changed and he's back in there. But I think it looks like two adversaries having an argument rather than good information coming out. The answer to your question specifically, it's certainly appropriate to hold the president accountable for previous comments he made that were incorrect and misleading, and whether or not that's hurting his credibility as he makes these new extensions of, you know, staying at home and hunkering down. That's a very important issue, the president's credibility during this and his ability to lead by the bully pulpit. And I think it can be asked and it can be discussed, but just posing it the way it was posed, some people in Alabama, Mississippi, whatever, part of the 50% that are polling in favor of Trump, we'll just look at it and think it's the media trying to make Trump look bad.
Except Acosta was right. Except Acosta was right. He's right.
Well, him asking it, then it there's optic problems with it. Some people will see it differently than what it really is, and you got to be careful.
Can I disagree? Can I jump in here? I think I hear what Mike is saying. Those are good journalistic procedures up until the time of this president, but he makes really good questions good questions for him sound like gotcha questions because he's simply out to disgrace the media. When he was asked by Pete Alexander the other day, what would you say to Americans who are scared?
Right.
Is that a gotcha question? That's what he called it. So I think we have to stop all of this, how to treat him and how it looks, and just ask the questions. Just forge ahead. I think the different rules are called for.
JP.
I think the White House press corps has already modified their behavior. I was amazed at how polite the questions were yesterday. I think for an Acosta question yesterday, that was not that impolite of a question. That was a totally fair question. And so I think that the White House press corps now knows that they are on national TV in primetime every night. And the questions to the president a few weeks ago were very snarky, very, you know, gotcha. They are now being much more polite and do not want to be seen as a biased media when they ask him these questions because they know they're on national television. They know that they're being judged just like the president. Judge on their impartiality.
But
let's go to Alan. And then I got to take a break too.
Okay,
go ahead.
Here we go,
Alan.
Very quickly. But you all have to remember, this president is at war with the press. He wants the press to be the bad guys, and so no matter what question he's asked, no matter how they ask it, he's going to turn it around as he has been doing.
Mike brought this point up a moment ago about letting people then filter through and holding at what point you hold the president responsible for what he said. We have a question about just that. I will lead with that when we come back. We have a quick break. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, JP Miller. I'm Joe Donahue, 47 minutes past 9 o'clock. We go to this letter from Quinn. We got a lot of letters. This one from Quinn, who says, at what point do we, the American people, hold the federal government and this administration responsible for the thousands of unnecessary deaths? It was through their ineptitude, irresponsibility, and downplaying of this situation that has caused this pandemic to explode. This is a point that Alan made a few moments ago. Who will be held accountable for this, and how will they be disciplined? Who would like that one?
Well, there's
first
only one way.
November.
That's right. Rosemary.
November was the answer.
And that's where the concept of passion comes into all of this. I've been thinking about this a lot. Andrew Cuomo, Rosemary and I had a difference of opinion on this yesterday, but Andrew Cuomo has passion. My problem with Joe Biden is, I think in order to win an election, which Rosemary just mentioned in November, you need to have passion. It is what attracts a certain kind of person to Trump, and what that passion is, I think, somewhat absent in Biden.
I still disagree. I see your point, Alan, and you're not wrong. But the Democrats, cannot at this point say, "Okay, never mind. We don't like the guy we had. Here's a new one. He's doing really good."
No, they're not going to. They're not going.
They can't.
Well, let's put it this way: they're not going to now, which is why I think, and this is where you and I are really going to have a battle royal. I think it's an extraordinary time, and I think a vice presidency would be in line
now,
right
need
now.
Need a woman? He promised.
He promised, but he didn't promise in the middle of a pandemic like this one.
Now, also, the governor, though, promised his own brother last night on CNN that he would not become vice president. He would not run for president. He would not run for vice president.
Yeah, he said
good.
It. And
Alan asked me yesterday a good question. You're like, okay, so if he broke his promise and made Cuomo the vice president, you'd vote for Trump, which, of course, I wouldn't. But I would hold it against Cuomo. I would never vote for him again because he'd be breaking the promise too.
Well,
we sure do disagree
on that one.
Yes, definitely.
By the way, have we talked about the show that is primetime with Chris Cuomo? That Chris Cuomo interviewing his brother every night has become must-see television.
I mean, I once wrote a piece about how that was such a huge conflict of interest, but for the same reason that the governors down home family style is touching people now at this time. Him, the siblings fighting like that, not fighting, you know what I'm talking about, kind of the banter. It's reassuring and it feels good. I have to admit it.
Yep. All right, let's go to the letters. We have many. Patrick says Governor Cuomo is asking for and receiving volunteers to help patients. He's also saving the ventilators that was sent to him for when they are going to be needed soon. These are the right things to do. Do you see governors of other states mandating that their healthcare workers stay in their state and not put themselves at risk coming to New York so they can be used and available when the critical time hits their states? It's a good question.
Yeah, it's the reason that you need federal leadership. They should not be put in the position, the governors, of making that decision.
Federal government. Well, you know, the fact is, Cuomo made a very good point. We need the help, and we need it very badly. You take a look at that map, you see the big yellow blob, and when you need it, we'll send you our people. I think that kind of interdependence is very admirable.
Right, and that kind of leadership should be coming from the White House, and it isn't, and that's what makes Cuomo look so good right now. I think that, just as you say, that this is going to peak and wane in different parts of the country, and there should be a federally coordinated, there isn't, but there should be a federally coordinated effort to pounce using all the resources available to all the United States. And that's really what Cuomo is suggesting they do. Maybe Trump, which has... You know, interestingly, Trump has kind of followed the lead on Cuomo on so many things in this that maybe Trump will come up with a way to do that or Pence will come up with a way to do that. It'll be humorous for us to watch that happen, but I hope it happens. I mean, I hope
Fauci
sees the need. Yeah.
You know, Mike, Fauci has basically started to lay it all out. What's next? Detroit is next. We have our eye on Detroit.
Right.
It may not be what we're talking about, but it does lay out some of the priorities that are going to be coming up.
And also, Fauci also has been laying out the second wave of what could happen in the fall, which he's been talking about as well.
And that is so true, Joe.
We got a letter from Joe who says, I appreciate our government's capacity to take bold actions in a time of national crisis, but I confess to a growing uneasiness about our civil liberties. The judicial system is shut down. There's discussions of enforced quarantines and travel restrictions and rationing of medical care. Police are locking people out of public parks because they don't trust them to social distance. Cuomo says he'll take over private hotels for hospital beds if necessary. Am I becoming paranoid from all this isolation, or do some of you share this concern? It's another great question.
It would be impossible to say, you know, I'm not concerned and I'm not worried that in the process of trying to, you know, act decisively to defeat the coronavirus and the pandemic, that some people's individual rights are not going to be trampled on. And I don't know how exactly it will play out, but I think it has to be part of the equation. There still has to be that kind of respect for individual rights. At the same time, it's inevitable that it happened after 9/11. It happens during wartime. I'm not justifying it. We saw the horrible things that happened with the Japanese internment because people were scared and the government needed to take what they thought was necessary action. Mistakes will be made, and the postmortem will look back at this and we'll learn a lot from it to try to put into place measures that prevent it from happening again, but it we're writing a new chapter in history right now. This is all new, and it's not comfortable at all.
And when speaking of not being comfortable, a lot of people have been writing me letters all along and writing us letters all along saying that Trump is going to call off the election. Now you see things like in Massachusetts, they're going to call off the Democratic convention. And there's a big important race between Markey and Kennedy going on. And so does this set a precedent for the president when it gets to his level to say, you see, if he thinks he's going to lose the election, saying, OK, you see, we have to call off the election or at least postpone it, maybe postpone it indefinitely. That's very scary.
And let's not forget the Justice Department, which wants to stop the right of habeas corpus, which has not happened since the Civil War.
Civil War.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to letters. Jerry says, I am concerned about Joe Biden as candidate for president. I have seen some disturbing interviews where he is almost incoherent. I have real concerns about his ability to lead. If elected, I only hope he chooses Elizabeth Warren as his VP. Also, why is there no discussion of Tara Reid's allegation that Biden sexually assaulted her in 1993? Can you shed some light on this? Is it fake news? I mean, I certainly have seen that story. It's been around for the last week and a half or so. I think it does get tamped down because of the other headlines. Rosemary, what do you think?
First of all, it feels like old news, and we don't do good with that. Don't do well with that. And Americans want new stuff. The fact that the president is a sexual predator is old news to them. Sad but true. It's one more reason why it would be very nice to have a woman vice president to keep these things in, on the front burner. Her story is out. I'm not quite sure I agree with the premise of the question that it hasn't been discussed.
And by now, we don't know about Russian accents. We don't know how much of this is phony.
Right.
This is almost predictable, considering how much Trump didn't want Biden to be the opponent.
Right.
You know, I worry about that.
Yeah, there's a story that's disappeared. Impeachment and corruption in Ukraine and all of that has just disappeared, hasn't it? He was so concerned
about.
But, you know, the pandemic gives him cover for so many things, and he's not above, as we know, using tragedy to his own ends. So he's going to blame everything. Every lapse in his stewardship of the country will be blamed on the pandemic that took all of his attention, he'll say.
I don't know how you can justify spending billions on the wall right now if the country is suffering. I could see that money going so many more places and to be better used. It seems so contradictory. I really do believe and hope that he'll be held accountable as we get closer to November. And just one point, Alan, to the notion that Trump will unilaterally call for the postponement or the cancellation of the election. He can't. Congress has to. The House of Representatives has to do that. And I don't think that's going to happen with this House of Representatives. It's the constitutional authority for setting the election doesn't rest with the commander-in-chief, and for a good reason.
Go ahead, Alan.
Just going to say, Mike, from your lips to God's ear, I hope you're right. What we have seen in the past when dictatorships happen, when military putches happen, there may be constitutional safeguards, but all too often they get ignored. And again, as Rosemary or somebody said earlier, or JP, or anybody, you know, there,
you can all take credit.
Sorry about the memory here. You know, this is just a matter of the way in which you know, it works. This guy is a very dangerous man.
Well,
I put nothing past him.
To your point, Alan, earlier, a very good point about what was happening in Massachusetts. I mean, even what you're seeing in New York, Mike, I guess what I worry about is you say, okay, we're going to move the primary from April to June. We may very well be exactly where we are or in some parts of the country even worse. In June than we are in April. And I'm just, so what do you do then? You know, does the situation really change? And then, because now we're pushing all of these primaries to June, well, you can push them just so far before you start tripping over the conventions and to what is considered the campaign between the two. Mm. And I just wonder how that will play itself out. And I do worry about that.
Yeah, I mean, the Democrats are considering options to their own convention, the National Democratic Convention in late July in Milwaukee, you know, because by then it might be bigger in Milwaukee than it is now in New York. And there has to be contingencies. Right now is the time to put the contingencies in place, and that's what some people, Amy Klobuchar, has pushed for. It's setting up a system now to let people vote by mail. It isn't like they're not going to have an opinion on November 8th or 7th or whatever the date is. I think it's the 4th this year. But whatever date it is, in November, they'll have a strong opinion, and they should be able to vote And if there's circumstances that interfere with them going out to the polls or whatever, that ought to be addressed now and preempt any crazy, you know, dictatorial action by the president.
Right, because if Fauci is right, we're going to see, we could well see a second round right around the time of that election.
Right. All right. According to my email counter, we have somewhere around 380 letters. So Sarah and I are going to go through them, pick a couple, and we'll try to get to as many as possible. As we do that backbreaking work, wink, wink, we'll take a break. We'll go over to news with Ray Graff, and we will return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our second hour. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We have many, many. We will get to as many of those many as we possibly can. Let's begin with Lena, who says, although I cringe every time the pandemic is called a wartime situation, every healthcare worker and healthcare administrator is doing the work for all of us. How to get the blind followers of Trump to see that he does not take every opportunity to talk about them. Love you guys, says Lena. We then go to Jim, who says, I applaud Governor Cuomo's calm and positive steering of the ship during this dangerous time. However, it's important to keep in mind that during his time in office, he has pushed for severe cuts in Medicaid. Per the New York Times, his 2020 budget proposal includes $400 million in cuts to Medicaid. This would impact the poorest hospitals, the most threatening their ability to serve the poorest citizens. I hope the current crisis will change his mind. Anything on that, Alan?
No. You know, I would want to pass to Rosemary, who is always so upfront about all of this. I pass to you, Rosemary, as in bridge.
No, I can't. I was not listening.
All right.
That's two of us.
Can I catch for Rosemary? What I would say is interesting is you always only pass me when we're not listening.
I don't like working here. I'm multitasking, and I should not be. I'm sweeping the kitchen floor, literally.
Right. JP, thank you for listening. What would you like to say?
Well, tonight is the deadline to pass the New York State budget, the reported $260 or $270 billion state budget. And, you know, the politicians in Albany have not been in Albany for a couple weeks and are, cobbling together this budget, in secret, according to the Wall Street Journal. Jimmy Vielkind of the Wall Street Journal said that. And it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of this budget, how it's voted on and all that.
Well, this is Cuomo's budget. It's obviously going to have less contention than usual. He's got both houses of the legislature, J.P. Wright, and himself, and he is the man of the moment. I can't see that he has much going for him, much more going for him than that, except that think about for a second what the exigencies of this situation are. And when we said, when we just raised the budget, you say that compared to all the people who are dying out there and who are. So I have a feeling this is going to be his budget. He's got a big problem, however. He's got a huge deficit. And we don't know how he's going to handle that.
Well, it's clear that we're going to have to borrow.
Including education, Rosemary, has been the sacred cow of Albany politics for a long time. The way that it always works, I don't have to tell any of you this, but the way that it always works is the governor says we're going to keep it where it is. The education people come back and they say, no, we need a lot more. The legislature checks in and says, yeah, they need a lot more because they're, school boards and everything in their districts. And then they give them a little bit more. Not this time.
Yeah, as I said about Trump, it's true for Cuomo, too. The pandemic is going to be an excuse to push through a lot of things they wanted to do and were unable to previously.
Like, for example.
I'm also reading Amanda Fries in the Albany Times-Union this morning that roughly 120,000 state employees on the administrative payroll could see a delay in their paychecks this week. So, the state obviously is not generating the revenues that they're used to, and it'll be interesting to see in the budget how they go about patching and starting to get people, get those funds moved again.
Back to the letters. Deborah writes, can any of you imagine a military coup to remove Trump from office?
No.
Agreed. Anybody else?
That would be bad.
Okay.
No, that would be very bad.
Another Ellen says...
Oh, wait, wait. I think it's another way. You try turning that around. Can any of us imagine a military coup fomented by Trump? And there, I would not say no. I'd say distant possibility, but much more of a possibility than the other way around.
Ellen says, why isn't there more fact-checking of Governor Cuomo? For example, he said that hand sanitizer made in state prison are used inside and outside the prisons, but that is not true. It is widely banned inside prison to fear that inmates will consume it due to the high alcohol content. Why aren't those restrictions relaxed in the dire need of pandemic?
Good question. We are so appreciative of his great leadership. I don't detract from that, but we have tended, I think, not to check him as much as he should be. There's context for the problems in New York State hospitals that are not being covered right now, too.
Robert says, in these uncertain times, it's the individual acts of heroism that defines democracy. Here up in the North Country, a single dentist is taking emergency patients from all over up here. All practices are closed. These professionals risk their families' health care for us to make them to make us all better. Dennis says, thanks for providing some reason and enlightenment during the crisis regarding coverage of the president's daily briefings, quote unquote. I think the simple solution is to delay broadcast until he starts taking questions. Before then, it's just a dog and pony show of corporate executives and others kissing the ring and perhaps something else of our dear leader. Jim says the Trump gang has stopped enforcing clean air and I believe clean water rules during a respiratory pandemic. Why are they making it more difficult for people to breathe? How many other protections for American citizens are they bulldozing while people are being distracted by the pandemic?
It's as if this guy doesn't have children or grandchildren of his own. That's what always gets me about Trump. I mean, you know, we are talking about the future of our country, the future of our kids. Whether they can grow up breathing the air, it is really beyond their responsibility on his part.
Michael,
don't you think?
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, don't you think that issue, you know, the EPA is pressing ahead with the Trump administration plan to reduce the air quality emission standards, essentially, and that was the story today, and then the work continuing on the wall. So what's going on here is the hot item issues, government deregulation and stopping the immigrants from coming in from Mexico, those are still getting resources and attention while they're pointing that out while they're fighting the pandemic, and that is playing to his base. This is all strategy to make sure that when election time comes around, his base is right with him to support him.
Well, the only silver lining, of course, is that those factories and polluting businesses are not working right now.
Yeah, New York State thruway traffic is down like by half. So air emissions are down, you're right.
All right, let's go ahead.
Joe, there's one other thing that we haven't talked about that's being investigated right now. All those hospital ships, you know how Trump followed the lead of Cuomo and sent them in. Apparently, the federal government is not allowing them to take COVID cases. They're only going to take non-COVID cases.
So they're moving.
State needs right now.
So they're moving the people out of the hospitals that are not COVID related to make room.
The hospitals themselves are not taking these patients, which is interesting. That's not what the governor asked for.
Michael says, I've always heard the number one priority of our elected officials is the health and safety of their constituents. If this is true, some governors have lost their priorities to their economy or reelection. Wealth over health? Question mark. Cynthia makes this point. The coronavirus has heightened attention and action to get people washing their hands, which is disturbing in itself that people need to be reminded to wash their hands. With this in mind and the simultaneous issue regarding clean drinking water, it's worrisome to consider the amount of water that is wasted down the drain as people more often tend to leave the tap flowing as they scrub their hands counting to 20. It is my opinion that we should make people also be aware of turning the water off when they don't use it. Thanks for allowing me to share my shtick.
Now, in our town of Great Barrington, I believe I'm correct, you pay for the amount of water you use. So that's an incentive to not use too much water.
That's a good point.
I would say that's a good letter.
Yeah. Very fun. I mean, it's a good fun in the sense of a different take. John says, would it be wonderful if corporations that are profiting from manufacturing medical supplies and equipment shared it with their employees and those that are really hurting right now? Jan says, I love the panel. Thanks for all you do. I have to disagree with Alan, who I love. Joe Biden is the leading Democratic candidate for presidency. While I agree that Andrew Cuomo has been doing a great job, I strongly disagree with Allen's promoting Cuomo to be president. It's not Cuomo's time. Didn't he commit to not running for president when he won his last term? We cannot disrupt the Democratic process. The voters have spoken. It will be very disruptive and will make Democrats look uncommitted, weak, and fickle. Andrew Cuomo is a young man who will have other opportunities.
Andrew Cuomo has said time and again, it was just mentioned, he said so last night on his brother's program, he doesn't want it. He said it to me individually and on the air. He doesn't want it. He's not going to take it. So you may be right. However, let's face it, Joe could use a little bit more passion in his procedure, in his way of putting it across, because otherwise... Here's what I'm going to tell you, folks. Otherwise, he may lose, and that would be a disaster.
Didn't Kristen Gillibrand say the same thing about, no, I want this office, state office, I'm not going to run for
it? Right. Well, that's a common thing, right?
Circumstances come up, and they see an opportunity, and they take it.
Well, as I have often said, you know, when you've been invited to the prom, you're a guy, and you've been invited by a woman to the prom. See what I'm doing there? And you say, I'm not going to say whether I'm going with you until you actually invite me. And there's no politician who's going to say, I want to do it. You know, why would he give up all the prestige of the governorship to do that?
Yeah, and there's another point, too, is that by the current standard of the Democratic frontrunners being 78 years old, Cuomo's got another 30 years before he has to jump in.
Well, that's excellent, Mike.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a good way of looking at it.
I've always thought that there was a golden ring, and if you have an opportunity, you grab the golden ring, and that opportunity seldom comes around a second time. So
I think you'll see Andrew Cuomo do a reprise of his father's convention speech at the Democratic National Convention this year. I think he will likely be the keynote speaker at the convention.
Oh, that's
very interesting, isn't it? Boy, that's a great thought to think about. Yeah.
The shining city on the hill where nobody's in the streets, everybody's home.
By the way, there's got to be an increase in radio consumption and in television consumption, people who are watching much more than they would have before. Does anybody know what those stats are?
Well, they say, I don't know. I mean, I certainly don't know about our numbers, but I do know overall the explosion in both podcast numbers and streaming numbers have gone through the roof, television streaming and so forth. Yeah, I mean, well, what else is there to do? And internet use, of course.
Tiger King.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wow. Tiger King. Well, but see, Alan, and if you're not in a committed relationship, you're not even supposed to do that.
What are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know. We've been married a long time, but I'm telling you, there have been articles about this.
Will there be a pandemic birth bump in 9 months?
Yeah.
I'll bet there will be. I bet there will be. There were after the great blackouts. We know that.
Well, on the opposite side of that, there's research coming out of, or reports coming out of China in the last couple of months that when people left their quarantines, the divorce rate spiked. So, you know, it goes both ways.
Yes. And I did hear a couple say, I don't know how in the world I'm supposed to do that with all these kids around the house. So there's that too. Yeah. Anyway, we go to.
I'm offended by all this talk.
Are you really? Karen says, now that my husband and I are both working from home, we're able to listen to your show every day. We love it and depend on it for our daily dose of sanity and humor. Question, do you know whether the 60,000 plus medical volunteers are being paid for their work or are they truly volunteering their time? My understanding was a little bit of both. Does anybody know the answer to this?
I think that's right. I think that's right.
I know some people, and I think it was up to many of the volunteers came in and said they were offered, and they said, no, we will do this. But I don't know if they're what the it probably depends on the facility, correct? Would be my guess.
Right. And some of the physicians who've like gone into other specialties and maybe into administrative roles and taken jobs in health departments, et cetera, are kind of reconnecting to their physician role, and they're being doing online, you know, the video conferencing with patients. A lot of that is being done so they can free up the regular physicians for the harder frontline work.
Well, Pete gets down to the nitty-gritty and says, press for the prez. Personally, I want to see every second of these crap fests from our inept leadership. The president lauding those who spread bad policy and religious mumbo-jumbo is very instructive concerning what direction this country is headed in. If you weren't paying attention, you can see where your friends and your enemies are located. Information is power, plain and simple.
Good for Pete.
Deborah says, I love Rosemary. Just like Stephen Colbert, Trevor Noah, and other late night hosts helped me get through the insanity of our government's response to this pandemic with a dose of humor. Rosemary channels my righteous anger and frustration with the president and his team, making me feel less powerless sitting in my home office as she says what I'm thinking passionately and loudly across the airwaves.
No, we're still powerless. Thank you for the compliment. That's good company, but we are so powerless. It's depressing.
Carol said, why should any politician in the greatest country on the planet, while experiencing one of the greatest crises in modern times, have anything but hardball questions at a press conference?
Yep.
Back to our earlier
discussion.
Ellen says, the two Trump supporters I know feel sorry for Trump when attacking questions are asked. They ignore the substance and strengthen their support. Ed says, I noticed and was relieved that President Trump actually sounded presidential for a majority of yesterday's briefing, but I'm sickened by him crowing that we are going to celebrate a great victory. There is a time for everything. This is not a time for celebrating. We haven't even buried the dead yet. Remember when Rudy Giuliani was New York City's mayor? He was at every funeral he could get to. I don't remember him going to pep rallies. We go to this is about let's see. Tells says, I write to urge Mike Spain to get a realistic grip on Trump and the press. His comments made it sound like the press should dumb it down to appeal to Trump's ignorant yokels who would not know real news if it bit him in the you know where. I didn't take it that way, Mike.
I hope not. All I'm saying is that there is a risk of doing what a previous writer just said, is that, you know, fueling people's hostility to the press. It just has to be done respectfully and carefully. And Yamuchi Alcindor, the PBS woman who bantered with Trump the other day, I think she was completely respectful and stood out. I don't think the NBC News guy, Peter, I can't think of his
Pete
last
Alexander.
Name.
Alexander.
Alexander, right. He offered a softball to Trump. He said, what should you tell people who are frightened right now? And he said, you're a terrible reporter. The same exact question practically came here in Albany to Governor Cuomo like within 24 hours. And he did one of his very heartfelt, emotional kind of, sidebars about how difficult it is and how it's important to look at family and have conversations and recognize that we're all under, you know, it was just, he took it the way, if Trump had taken it that way and not gotten in his hair up about Peter Alexander and some previous bad stuff that had gone on between them, he could have risen to the occasion, but he's not rising to the
occasion.
Mike,
I'm just saying, Mike, yeah. I don't agree. I think Trump, the rationale here is Trump has 50% of this country, unbelievably for a guy like this, has 50% of the country loving him. And why? Because he creates enemies out of everyone. And the enemy of the press is what he wants. So when they ask a softball question and he phrases it as a hardball question, he's not interested in making peace with them. He wants war because it's what works for him.
Oh, sure. But don't you understand? It's a complicated dynamic. The press has an absolute requirement to hold him accountable and ask the hard questions.
Sure.
It can backfire sometimes. That's all.
Yeah, well, tough noogies. I mean, I don't care if it backfires. They're doing the right thing, and that's all there is to it.
Tough noogies. I have more letters to go to. I just want a programming note. We've learned that the governor will be speaking at 11:30 this morning, so we'll be going to that live at 11:30. As soon as it becomes available, we'll be going to the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, for his daily briefing on the coronavirus response in the state of New York.
May I just say something very quickly, Joe?
Of course.
And that is that WAMC, we had our morning meeting. We have it every morning at 7:50. And we've been having some trouble getting a clear signal from some of the governor's press conferences. We've got it done, but it's very hard. Our friends at WNYT have been helpful, and we're doing what we have to here, but we need some more equipment, and equipment costs money. End of discussion.
Christy writes, good morning and thank you so much, panel. Yesterday's press conference from the White House felt like one long infomercial, only with free advertising for a multitude of companies, punctuated with hailing, cooing praise for Trump. The companies helping should be acknowledged by the president, but these companies should not be given the mic to speak for several minutes, each to describe themselves at length and eventually their pertinent actions. I feel like I was about to be sold a juicer.
Yeah, I have a wish that in their old age, the grandchildren of those CEOs play back how they looked and sounded at that press conference as they're struggling with incredible debt and filthy environment and maybe even continuing death. And they're going to play back and say, yeah, you love this guy. Explain that, Grandpa.
Good.
Well, at least he's not shaking their hands anymore.
No, not
what he did for a while.
I love that they put everybody out in the Rose Garden, though. That's fantastic. I mean, the last I looked, the temperature yesterday was 43. It can't be completely warm out there. But anyway, Barbara says she has a point to make. Thank you so much, Roundtable. Right now, most serious journalists and citizens know that Trump and his administration did nothing for almost 2 months, lying to everyone about the seriousness of the pandemic. Journalists should only ask questions of the scientists and now begin to ask questions about the future. Which path should we take? Austerity, which is what is sickening and killing us now, or a new deal with massive expenditures to strengthen and expand medical care, infrastructure, public education, and our environment. That from Barbara. We go to Maureen, who says, how will the assault allegations affect Joe Biden? Do you believe they will? I mean, we touched on this in answering a previous question about that the letter writer had not seen a lot about it, although there has been much printed. The story is out there. I don't know. Does it gain traction? It would have to gain more traction to be an issue, right?
I'm assuming that the president and his people want to make this into an issue the same way they wanted to make the vice president's son an issue. So they're going to repeat it again and again and again. Or if they don't repeat it, they're going to get other people to. But you got a president who makes this stuff, these accusations, look like child's play compared to what he's been accused of.
What I would say is I read 40 news sites every day, all day long.
Yes, you do.
There is nothing being covered except for the pandemic. There are virtually no stories about Joe Biden, no stories about the election. And I imagine that once this is hopefully past this, that this story and other stories on both Biden and Trump will be, you know, discussed in the media and discussed in debates and stuff. But to criticize the media right now for not talking about this issue when you know, it's all pandemic all the time.
We have to take a break, and then we'll be back to more pandemic right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. 17 more minutes of conversation, then we will hear Alan's conversation. We have Congressional Corner coming up this morning, and we'll hear the final part of his conversation with Congressman Anthony Brindisi. Also, at 11:30 this morning, we will have the governor speaking. He is going to be talking once again, giving us an update on the coronavirus response in New York State, and we'll be carrying that live at 11:30 or as soon as he comes to the microphone. Let's go back to letters. We have many, and we'll get to as many as we can in our time together. Rita says, I fervently hope that the press continues to ask challenging, difficult, confrontational questions, you know, in a sweet and respectful way.
That's exactly the right challenge. You got it.
You bet.
Dylan says, good morning. I just want to say thank you to WAMC reporters and the many staff who are needed to continue to bring us news and creative content in this frightening time. I wonder how everyone on the WAMC staff is getting by, and I hope they are all well. I imagine that much of the work is being done remotely for the first time, even beyond the panel members, and appreciate that the consistent quality of the broadcast has not suffered. Well, that's a very nice letter. Alan, do you want to address that at all?
No, and it's a very good reason to understand why we need to get support in order to follow along. You know, we had a letter yesterday from somebody, I'm sure a nice person, who said you should never ask for money during the pandemic. Hey, we have to. This is a time when we are just barely getting by. We're doing it. We're getting enough money to keep going. But now is the time, if you really love the service and you're paying for the New York Times and you're doing, you can do something to help WAMC, WAMC.org. And all I can say is we're depending on you. This is not, we can do it without you. We can't. We can't do it without you.
Dylan, thank you very much for the letter. Mary says, has a similar letter and says a deep felt thank you for being there for us every day. You keep me sane as I live alone and rely on you for a touch of sanity and company. Stay healthy and don't stop being here for us. You know, the people who live alone, I know families who are going stir crazy and going nuts, but I feel so bad for people who are living alone. You know, whatever we can do to help and whatever calls or FaceTime or whatever we can do to help those that we know are alone is really helpful. It is, it's a lot. So, Mary, thank you, and we're thinking of you, and that's very nice. Yes.
Not that I ever question the decision, but every day my mother says, thank God you're here. I mean,
yeah.
She would be one of those people all alone, and so I'm happy to be here.
Right. Right.
You know, Joe, years ago we heard, and I mean, it had to be like 25 years ago, I was on the air, we were raising money, and somebody called in and said, I got into my apartment, they didn't have a stick of furniture, I had nothing, I was all alone, I turned on the radio, and I knew I had a friend. I love that letter, and I've thought about it so many times.
Yeah. Well, it's true. And so you do have people and you can listen to us and hopefully there are other people who you can talk to. And but yeah, it certainly is a weird time. I will tell you, Mary, not to make your situation better, but I've also heard from people who are with their family and they wish they were alone. So there's that, too.
They say that.
Marcella says, I think we should leave our Democratic senators alone. We can't afford to lose any of them until there is a surplus of Democrats in the Senate. What do you think? All right. We'll leave that as a rhetorical question. Peter says, in response to a letter read earlier today, Donald Trump is the real threat to our democracy, not the governors who are taking appropriate and necessary steps to minimize the lethal spread of this pandemic. Anne is writing about the environment and says, isn't there a way to keep Trump from undoing laws that protect the environment? He is systematically attempting to remove the few regulations in place to protect our water, air, land, and allow big business to act unfettered. Must be stopped now. Good morning, panel, says Laura. I have two questions about cruise ships. What has happened to the cruise ships that were not allowed to dock? Are they still at sea? Could, and question two, could cruise ships be converted to hospitals? I know on the second question that that was something that was floated.
Considered. Floated. Was, that's funny, Joe.
Yes. Floated and considered.
On the first question, Joe.
Yes.
On the first question, I read this morning that the governor of Florida did not want to allow a cruise ship to park itself, or
correct,
whatever they call that, on the basis that there were a few people who had the disease there. This is the same Governor DeSantis who didn't want any New Yorkers down in Florida. I sure hope people will remember that.
You know, I'm trying to bring it up real quick, but my understanding about that ship, the Holland America cruise, they're asking the one that Alan you're referring to, but they have, I believe they have fatalities on that ship. There are dead people on that ship from coronavirus, and they're not letting them dock. They are pleading, the president of Holland America is pleading for compassion while Florida is debating allowing the ship to dock, and it's coming under a great deal of scrutiny. 189 passengers and crew are experiencing COVID symptoms. Many are testing positive.
So what are they supposed to do?
Four older guests had passed away.
So what are you supposed to do in a case like that? I mean, what do you do? You don't let them dock. Thanks for the word, Joe.
Yep.
What is it that we as Americans do? You can't come into my town. You can't come into my state. You're on a cruise ship. I will say one thing, Rosemary. I don't know why anybody, compos mentis, would get on a cruise ship. And I felt that way before the fact.
But they're on there.
You could dive.
There are ways to deal with it, though, don't you think? I mean, it can be managed. They can be allowed to dock, and then they can, healthcare workers in protective clothing can go in and assess the situation, and people will need to be quarantined for a sufficient period of time, testing, medical care, all that. I mean, it can be done. It takes a lot of resources, but just to sort of like say, hey, don't come here, does seem cold.
But don't play cheap politics.
Right.
Don't play cheap politics.
Well, and there are dead people on the ship. And I just, you know, to the respect for them and the people who are sick, it's a horrible situation. So, Laura, thank you very much for the question. Hopefully that gives you some insight. Jackie says, is it true that Trump wants to personally sign the stimulus checks? Well, I think he wants his name on them. I don't think he's going to be sitting there signing every one, but right? Am I right on that?
That's what we read.
What we have heard. David is writing go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was just going to say, I think a lot of them are going to be automatic transfers. If you pay your taxes through a bank account transfer, they have your numbers and they'll just put it back in your bank account. So a lot of them won't be physical checks.
David is writing about the Macy's furloughs. He says, in 2018, the CEO of Macy's, Jeff Gennette, made over $12 million in total compensation. Yesterday, Macy's announced it's furloughing most of its 130,000 employees due to the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Wouldn't it be better for the country's economy for the companies like Macy's to initiate or to institute an across-the-board payroll reduction rather than cutting the bulk of its staff loose in these trying times? We should all be taking cues from the soccer star Lionel Messi, who is taking a 70% pay cut on behalf of the Barcelona support staff. Interesting letter. Susan says, the rules in prison about sanitizer... As my former foster son refers to it, okay, in joke there, have been relaxed according to reports in NPR, so the prisoners and staff are allowed to have it. So thank you for that update. That was a question that was brought up earlier. Mark says, does anyone know where Bernie Sanders has been lately? This seems like it would be the perfect time for him to be speaking loudly about universal health care. Well, he has done some press conferences last week. We haven't heard a great deal over the weekend. Does anybody know more? All right. With that response, I'll say no.
Silence.
No, I don't care. Sorry, I tried to resist.
News and commentary. Let's see. Mary says, at the grocery store recently, a nice young person was bagging while chatting away. I wondered how much of his saliva was falling on my food. God. And the food of dozens of other shoppers as well. Shouldn't grocery store workers be required to wear masks? It's an interesting point. I know at my grocery store there are huge plexiglass shields up so that they kind of go under the food and they're packing, but I don't know. Your grocery store may vary.
The next CDC regulation is likely to be that everyone in the supermarket, shoppers and staff, wear masks.
Well, the president talked about the need for almost everyone wearing a mask yesterday, which brought up the immediate question of, okay, but where are the masks?
Yeah, where do we get the masks?
Yeah, where do you get them for under $1,000 a box?
I was in my CVS.
I'll talk to you later. I can help you out with that.
Oh, good. Can you really?
Good. Well, be sure you can.
Really.
All right. John says, what's happening with the census that's supposed to be due tomorrow?
Oh, good question. I applied for a job as a census taker. I thought that would be a fun retirement activity and have heard nothing back. Not you're accepted, you're rejected. It seems that everything is on hold, but I don't know officially what's going on.
I didn't know it was due April 1st. I thought there was an extension on that, but I could be wrong. Mike, do you know?
Maybe there's a confusion with the income tax.
They do anticipate that people will not have made the deadline even before the coronavirus epidemic or pandemic. I did it the first day I got the letter in the mail for my household. And then I've gotten a second letter and a couple of postcards since then. I mean, they continue to nudge people. I don't know what has anyone heard what the compliance rate is at this point and where it stands?
I have not heard. I'm looking, though. I thought I had heard somewhere, and I'm looking this up. I thought that they had said that there was going to be an extension because of coronavirus. And I'm looking for this right now. Because the deadline is tomorrow, but I'm not finding it when I need.
There would seem like there would have to be, because the next phase is to knock on doors, and I don't think that they want to do that during this scary time.
Yeah, as I said, that's the job I applied for, and they're not even responding to job applicants.
Hmm.
All right, we'll find. Yeah, I'm trying to find the information, but I see things that say that there have been changes, but I can't find the actual information. Okay, so back to the final letter. So we'll do our homework on that one, John, and try to find out an answer for you. Andrew says, love your show. Super valuable these days. Like another writer, I'm disgusted by the commercialization during the conferences or the commercialism. I keep waiting for an exhausted, disheveled Jerry Lewis to come out to introduce the corporate drones. Let's see. We go to Sean says, I'm a frequent listener, first-time writer. Regarding the idea of a baby boom from this virus lock-in, there are funny memes on social media saying the baby boom will be all firstborn children. That resonates for parents of young children who are struggling to not only navigate new working situations, but also learning to be home, to homeschool their children. The struggle is a very real one. Yes. Yes,
that's
yes,
very good.
It certainly is. And let's see. Nancy says, do you have any information regarding how to apply for unemployment benefits when self-employed? This is a great example of a letter that is a good letter, but probably better if you Google it. Unless anyone knows the answer right off the top of their head.
No, but also that you call your congressional office, and ask that question. It's very specific. Yep. It's a good question.
And let's see. I've got two more minutes here, so we'll get to as many. Good morning, panel. If I heard or read correctly, the alleged victim of Joe Biden had been wanting to tell her story since 1993. Joe Biden served two terms as vice president of the U.S. and now appears to have a strong bid for the presidency. This woman comes out of the woodwork. Where was she for the past 17 years? Too coincidental for comfort. That is from Ruth. And then Melinda says, this is about Home Alone. Yes, as someone who lives alone, having your program to tune into each morning, so very much appreciated, like having friends over for coffee. So
that's great.
Thank
that's
you
great.
Very
I love
much.
That. I love that.
Melinda, we appreciate that. And David writes... David writes a very good letter, but I actually, and we don't normally do this, I'm going to save it tomorrow because it's a good letter, but unfortunately it's going to take more time for us to answer, again about Joe Biden. So I'm going to hold that and put it into the queue for tomorrow. It's a great question. We're just out of time. So I'm going to hold that one. I want to thank everybody. A reminder, the governor will be on at 11:30 this morning, 11:30, and we'll be going to that as soon as it becomes available. In the meantime, my thanks to Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and JP Miller. Thank you all. You guys are great. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And we love you.
Bye-bye.
Back to you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You very much.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. We will return and have the Congressional Corner next on WAMC.